today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
You know, the problem we have is just like the problem Paul had. You know what to do. You even want to do what's right. The problem isn't a lack of knowledge. The problem isn't a lack of desire. The problem is a lack of power. He says, how to perform what is good, I do not find. I know what the right thing is to do. I want to do it. But how to do it? It's just not within me.
Does your Christian life feel like a roller coaster full of ups and downs? Paul deals with that struggle. I want to do good, but I end up doing what I don't want to do. Pastor David will teach that this struggle between our desires and our actions reveals the weakness of the law. The law gives us the rules, but not the power to do it. We'll learn about the law of our flesh that fights against the law of God and our new nature in Jesus. We'll discover the way through which we can resolve this conflict and find victory. Now, here's Pastor David with today's edition of Enduring Word.
This is a precious text to my heart and to my mind this morning, Romans chapter 7, verse 13 to the end of the chapter. I think it speaks so clearly and so powerfully to the Christian life, to where we're at with the Lord, and how we can have even a better Christian life than we experience right now. You know, you can't fix a problem until you identify it. Whenever there's a catastrophe, there's a whole team of experts that immediately go into action to try to figure out exactly what it was that happened and how they can keep that thing from happening again. In some regard, it's the same way in our Christian life. We have problems, and until we really identify those problems, oftentimes we can't address them properly. And I think our text this morning deals with a very common problem in the Christian life. If you were to draw a graph of your Christian experience from the day that you first gave your life to Jesus, the day that you were first born again and became a follower of Jesus Christ, from that time until now, if you were to draw a graph of your Christian experience, what would it look like? You know, for a lot of us, it wouldn't just look like a roller coaster. It would look like Colossus out at Magic Mountain. You know, going up and then these death-defying drops screaming down and then, you know, edging back up again and then down. And to some regard, that's inescapable. There will always be some measure of ups and downs in the Christian life. But, you know, wouldn't you really like to flatten out those downs and make it just pretty much generally a progress up from glory to glory? Well, what is it that sort of sends us into those times where our walk with the Lord isn't what it should be, or maybe we find ourselves caught up in a particular sin? Paul deals with that question this morning. In this passage, God tells us what our problem is, what can't fix it, and the only thing that can save us from that problem. He begins in Romans chapter 7, verse 13, where Paul carries on a thought from previously in the chapter dealing with the whole issue of the law of God and how it works in our life. Verse 13, he says, "Has then what is good become death to me? Certainly not. But sin, that it might appear sin, was producing death in me through what is good, so that sin, through the commandment, might become exceedingly sinful." Earlier in the chapter, and we took a look at this last week together, we saw how the law of God, whether it comes down from Mount Sinai, whether it's written from the creation that we see all around us, or the law of God, even if it's written in your conscience, the law of God does two things. First of all, it reveals our sinful nature. We were kind of ignorant of what great sinners we were until we saw the law of God. And that really spelled it right out for us, didn't it? But the other thing that the law does is that it, in a strange way, it provokes us to even more sin. God draws a line in the sand and he says, now don't cross this line, And there's something wicked inside of us that says, I can't wait to cross that line. You know what I'm talking about. You experience that in your own heart, in your own life. Well, because the law does this, because it exposes our sin, and because the law magnifies our sin, Paul's wondering, is there something wrong with the law? Has then what is good, verse 13, has then what is good, he means the law, has it become death to me? He says, certainly not. There's nothing wrong with the law, but sin, that it might appear sin, that it might be exposed as sin, was producing death in me through what is good, again, through the law, so that sin through the commandment might become exceedingly sinful. Not only does the law expose sin, but it magnifies it. You might even say that sin becomes more sinful in light of the law. It exposed more and more for what it is, our black, dark rebellion against God. The law provides a perfectly pure and holy contrast to the blackness of our sin. You ever gone jewelry shopping? And when you're looking at that diamond there in the jewelry store, they don't put it against white satin for you to see the diamond against. Because, I mean, the diamond looks good up against the background of white satin. But what do they put behind the diamond so you can see it even better? They put black velvet, as black as they can find, because they want the brilliance of the diamond to shine out against the blackness of the background. Well, if you just reverse the idea a little bit, it's the blackness of our sin that stands out against the purity and the whiteness of God's holy commandment. And when you put that holy commandment behind it, all of a sudden our sin seems all the more black, all the more sinful, all the more, as Paul says, that sin through the commandment might become exceedingly sinful. See, and that leaves us with a problem that Paul addresses right here in verse 14, where he says, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I'm carnal, sold under sin." The law of God. All the rules that he makes, that he puts for us in his word, that he writes throughout the whole span of creation, that he puts in our hearts through conscience. Man, that law is great. The problem is that I'm carnal. The law is spiritual, but I'm carnal. Now, what does it mean to be carnal? Well, that simply means according to the fleshly nature. If you want to get into the ancient Greek word that's here, it simply means characterized by the flesh or according to the fleshly nature. It speaks of a person who can do differently, who should do differently, but they don't do it differently. They still sin against God and his law. And Paul says, listen, I know that the law is spiritual. There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is that I'm carnal. And a spiritual law can't restrain carnal man. There's nothing wrong with the law. The problem's with me. If I was spiritual, then the spiritual law would work for me. But the spiritual law can't restrain carnal man. And so what are we left at? Look at the end of verse 14. Sold under sin. It's like there we are. We're imprisoned by it. We're locked up by sin. There's a sense of bondage in our life. It's as if you're arrested for a crime and you're thrown in jail. And the problem is that you're guilty. You really did it. You know, if you didn't really do it, then you could say, well, I appeal to the law. But if you're really guilty, well, then what do you want? Well, then you want a lawyer and a really dumb jury. Because the law is not on your side. You want to do whatever else you can. Paul says, no, you see, the law is great, but I'm carnal. I'm sold under sin. The law is against me because I'm guilty. Now, he describes how this dynamic sort of works out in daily life, starting at verse 15. You're going to relate to this. He says, for what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it's good. But now it's no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me. But how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do. But the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Can we have an amen from that experience here? We know what Paul's talking about, don't we? You know exactly what he means. The struggle in the Christian life. You know, the problem we have is just like the problem Paul had. You know what to do. You even want to do what's right. The problem isn't a lack of knowledge. The problem isn't a lack of desire. The problem is a lack of power. He says, how to perform what is good, I do not find. I know what the right thing is to do. I want to do it. But how to do it? It's just not within me. And this really exposes the weakness of the law. You see, there's nothing wrong with the law. It's just incomplete. The law lays down the rules, and it does it beautifully. It does it perfectly. But the law gives us rules without power. You catch the distinction there? Yeah, it tells you exactly what to do, but it doesn't really help you to do it. It says, here's what you need to do to be approved of God. This is what you need to keep if you'll be accepted by Him. But the law doesn't give us any power to do it. And when we're in this place where we're there assaulted by the law, we know what the rules are, but we're having trouble keeping it all. The law says to us, here's the rules, but you better keep them. And it gives us no power to keep the law. You know, in this sort of crisis of living before God, we're right where Paul is when he says, if you noticed it there, in verse 19, he says, for the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. And then he goes on in verse 20, and he says, now if I do what I will not to do, it's no longer I who do it, but sin who dwells in me. Now please understand, Paul is not denying his responsibility as a sinner. When he says, it's not I who do it, he's not trying to say that it's his invisible twin next to him that really did it. No, Paul takes full responsibility for his sin. What he realizes is that there's something inside of him that's countering what he really is in Jesus Christ. And what he is in Jesus Christ is the real Paul. Made according to the new man, the new nature. Because that's not me. The real me is the new man. And this principle I find fighting against me, it's not really me, but it's sin dwelling in me. And I can't ever let it have the upper hand. I want to have the victory over it. You see, Paul recognizes that when he sins, he acts against his nature as a new man in Jesus Christ. Christian, do you realize that? When the Christian sins, he acts against his nature. That's not true for the person who isn't born again, who hasn't received this transformation of their life by Jesus Christ. If you haven't had that transformation, when you sin, you're acting according to your nature. But when the Christian sins, they act against their nature. And that's why it's a struggle within you. That's why the battle rages all the way to the point where we find it in verse 20, where Paul's almost in despair here. He looks at it here at verse 20. He says, now, if I do what I will not to do, it's no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. But I see another law in my members, in my body, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. Paul says, I find a law that evil is present within me. You know, only the person who really tries to be good is aware of this struggle. Do you remember the time before Jesus touched your life when you could pretty much sin as you please and it just didn't seem to bother you the same way it does now? You know, sometimes you almost wish for those days back again. Don't wish for them back again. You know, if you think that it's bad having the devil as your enemy, try having him as your friend. That's an even worse place to be in, friends. And we never know how hard it is to stop sinning until we try to stop sinning. And that's the struggle that Paul is faced with right here. He says, I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. He says, I know that the real me, the real inward man, I delight in God's law. It's the impulse to sin that comes from another law in my members. The real Paul is the one who delights in the law of God. Friends, get this down clearly in your mind. The real you is not the old man. That's crucified with Christ. The fleshly nature is not the real you. The fleshly nature is temporary. God's going to resurrect that. Your fleshly nature is destined to die an earthly death unless Jesus Christ comes for his church first, which we all hope for and say, come quickly, Lord Jesus. But apart from that, your natural flesh, it's destined for earthly death, but then glorious resurrection and transformation. No, the real you is not the old man. The real you is not the fleshly nature. The real you is the new man, created and patterned according to Jesus Christ. I find it interesting to read the theologians on this passage in Romans chapter 7. The theologians love to debate whether or not Paul could have written this when he was a Christian. Is he describing his experience as a believer or as an unbeliever? Because they say, well, you know, surely a believer has a higher ground of victory than this, than to say, I see this struggle of sin within me and I fight against it with all my might and I'm warring against it. And as he says at the end of verse 23, that there's a law in my mind, it's bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. And some people have said, well, you know, that has to be talking about before I was a Christian. And I read those guys and I say, what are you talking about? You know, I didn't really care about honoring God and pleasing Him until I was a Christian. This is sort of a non-issue for the person who doesn't want to honor Jesus Christ. For them, it's easy. You know, in some sense, the battle doesn't really begin until you are a believer. So I believe firmly that Paul is describing his experience and his struggle being a believer in Jesus Christ, having this experience, as he says in verse 23, where this other law, this principle of sin within him, warring against the law of his mind and bringing him into the captivity of the law of sin. It's as if he sees himself being dragged down in the shackles of sin. How am I ever going to find deliverance? How am I ever going to find a place of peace and victory in the Christian life? Some of you may have come to church this morning feeling exactly that way. Nobody sees it in your life. You do a pretty good job of covering it up. You haven't been caught yet, so to speak. Your life is given over to sin in one place or another, and you don't want it to be that way. How can it change? Look at Paul's declaration in verse 24. He says, O wretched man that I am. Do you feel like that sometimes in your walk before God? O wretched woman that I am. O wretched man that I am. I want to walk before you in purity and holiness, God, but I just somehow can't. You know, that ancient Greek word for wretched right there means more literally wretched and worn out through the exhaustion of hard labor. You know what Paul has described for us so far in the text that we've looked at in Romans chapter 17, verses 13 through 24? Really what he's described for us is the person who wants to please God, who wants to live a righteous life, who wants to overcome sin, and they are trying their hardest in all the energy of their willpower to do it. But your willpower can't do it. If your willpower could do it, then you wouldn't need Jesus. But somehow, by instinct, we're sort of drawn back to relying on our own willpower, to gritting our teeth and sort of scrunching our eyeballs as tight as we can, say, I can do this, I can do this. Because, you know, the human will is capable of amazing achievements. People perform athletic events or endure horrific pain just through the pure strength of the human will. But the human will is not strong enough to overcome sin in you. If you think it is, then just stop sinning. Go ahead, right now. Just stop sinning. Well, you can't do it, can you? Because human will is not enough. And Paul is wretched. He's worn out. He's just a collapsed heap of a man through the exhaustion of hard labor because he's been trying to please God through willpower. And at the end of it, he goes, I give up. Oh, wretched man that I am. Is that a good place to be in, or is it a bad place? Well, in one sense, it's a bad place. None of us want to be that wretched person. But on the other hand, it's a great place to be in, isn't it? You're in the place where the great men and women of God through the centuries have been. You know, when you take a look at the great saints in the church through the centuries, they're not people who go around saying, man, I am so holy, I am so great. Rather, they have a keen eye towards their own sinfulness and they bewail it. We're in a lot more trouble when we stop seeing our sinfulness than when we do see it well. And so Paul cries out in desperation, oh, wretched man that I am. You see, the entire tone of the statement shows that Paul is desperate for deliverance. He's overwhelmed with a sense of his own powerlessness and sinfulness. And we have to come to the same place. Paul was desperate for deliverance, and we have to be desperate as well. You know, oftentimes our desire to walk right and to be right before God, it's just sort of a vague hope to be better. We want God to come down from heaven and sprinkle some pixie dust on us and make us the Christians that we should be. And he says, no, you have to cry out against yourself, oh, wretched man that I am. And you have to cry out unto God, oh, wretched man that I am. The turning point comes right in the middle of verse 24. Did you see it there? Oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? You know what he doesn't say? You know, the way we live it sometimes, it goes like this. Oh, wretched man that I am, I have to find a way to figure this out. Oh, wretched man that I am, I have to try harder. That's the key. No, Paul finally comes to the place of total desperation where his perspective turns outside of himself and unto somebody else. He's like a man sinking in quicksand, and he tried the best that he could do. You know, he spun his legs, he spun his arms, he tried to climb out, but the quicksand just taking him down more and more. And finally, you know, he's up to his neck, and he's just about ready to go under, and the only thing he can do is cry out and say, will somebody save me? Because I can't do it myself. Then he can find the salvation. You know, what's really interesting is up to the point that we've seen already in the text, in Romans chapter 7, verses 13 through 25, Paul refers to himself some 40 times. Isn't that amazing? Some 40 times in the passage that we've just examined, he refers to himself. That's his whole focus. That's his whole mentality. Let me show this to you, and if you'll bear with me with a little bit of an exaggerated reading, I think I can make the point crystal clear. Go back to verse 13. He says, has then what is good become death to me? Certainly not, but sin, that it might appear sin, was producing death in me through what is good, so that sin, through the commandment, might become exceedingly sinful. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it's good. But now that it's no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin who dwells in me. You get the point, don't you?
For many of us, studying the Bible is a part of our everyday lives. There seems to always be those sections of Scripture that are difficult to understand. What did Jesus really mean when he said, "And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you"? Was Jesus literally telling us to disfigure our bodies? Of course not. We know that's not true. So what does it mean? This is where God has used men like Pastor David Guzik in the writing of commentaries. Pastor David has written numerous commentaries throughout the Bible, In fact, you can find commentary on the entire New Testament and most of the Old Testament at enduringword.com. These commentaries are available digitally at the website and even in mobile format. Concise thoughts about the history, context, and author make these commentaries a valuable resource as you seek to know Jesus more. We encourage you to log on to enduringword.com and select the book and chapter you're currently studying. Or you can purchase a copy of Pastor David's commentary for your Kindle or even a printed copy. Simply log on to enduringword.com and select books from the main menu. Another great option from Pastor David is his book, Standing in Grace. This book details the fact that those who belong to him are not only saved by grace, they stand in grace. Again, for all these wonderful resources and more, log on to enduringword.com. Well, that concludes our time together today. Please place a marker in your Bibles and make plans to join us again for the next edition of Enduring Word Radio.